I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, publisher and editor of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987, and editor of PWTorch.com and PW Torch VIP, and also host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast exclusively at Podcast One. But I'm here today to introduce the best of PW Torch Livecast selection for today, Friday, October 27th, 2017, going back this week to July 19th, 2013, an interview, part one, with the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. I was joined for this interview by Bruce Mitchell, and he talked honestly but harshly about Ultimate Warrior's place in history and why he wasn't respected by his peers. Some great Mid-South stories. Also, the greatest stipulation match ever. His thoughts on his son's lack of a WWE push and how the family is reacting, some Bill Watts stories, and much more. This is a great supplement, an extension of what you might have heard on the Podcast One show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast today. My new interview with Ted DiBiase talking about his documentary, autobiographical documentary on his life, the mistakes that he made as a professional wrestler and as a father, and what he has done since his days as a Million Dollar Man. And also updated thoughts on his son, Ted DiBiase Jr., and what he's been up to since leaving. And also some thoughts on how family-friendly WWE schedule really is and could be if they made some changes. So that is in today's Wade Keller podcast, which you can get by searching Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, including over at Podcast One. So check that out. If you're not a subscriber to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, I host shows there 4 days a week, just like I used to do here on the live cast schedule, with a post-Raw show, a post-SmackDown show, a weekly flagship, and a weekly interview. And now, without further delay, let's just take you right to the best of PW Torch Livecast selection, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Bruce Mitchell, Torch senior columnist, joins me for this interview, conducted back in July of 2013. Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller. It is Friday, July 19th, 2013, and because it is Friday, it is Interview Friday here on the Livecast, and Bruce Mitchell, senior columnist for well over 20 years now, going on 23 in September. Bruce, you're joining me today. Welcome to the show again, Bruce.
Good to be here. Beautiful day.
And our special guest today, we are excited to announce, is the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Ted, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you again, Wade.
It is great to talk to you again. I interviewed you about 20 years ago for several hours, kind of a career retrospective interview for the Pro Wrestling Torch yearbook. And Bruce Mitchell, you interviewed Ted not long ago in front of a live audience. Talk about that a little bit and go ahead and lead off the interview.
Well, I'm just really excited to be talking to Ted DiBiase again because his career just spans so much. The Million Dollar Man, of course, is what he's most famous for in WWE, but a top star, a top wrestler everywhere he went. and he went to all the top places. So there's just a lot to talk about with Ted DiBiase. It made it very easy to do. And, you know, it was one of my first experiences, definitely my first experience interviewing someone with an audience watching us. So I appreciated that. But, Ted, we talked about this off the air. In about a month, the Mid-South DVD collection comes out from WWE, and can you talk about your experience working for Bill Watts and the highlights and what and some of the things that you learned in Mid-South wrestling? And
I give Bill Watts a lot of credit for my career. There were a few people that were very instrumental in shaping my career and helping me become a worker. And Bill Watts, in my opinion, is one of the smartest guys in terms of the psychology of wrestling that I've ever known. He was a student of Eddie Graham, as several were. And, of course, a lot of people put Eddie up there as, like, the best of all time, but I'm not sure that Bill doesn't come in right behind him. I'm telling you, yes, Vince McMahon's a marketing genius. Vince McMahon, oh my gosh, I know for a fact that people that go to college and are studying marketing and they major in marketing, the WWE is talked about all the time as an unbelievable marketing success. But I think if you'd have taken Bill Watts' savvy of wrestling and the psychology of wrestling and added that to what Vince knows about marketing, there's no telling what the business would be today. I give Bill Watts a lot of credit. In the early days, it was kind of like I had a love. I think everybody had a love-hate relationship with Bill. It was like, you understood that, he did really good business and his business was very good. But, he seemed to be somewhat of a slave driver. And we did a lot of long, long, long miserable trips, and days off were few and far between. It comes with the job description as well. But, more than any other place, Mid-South Wrestling shaped me. And in reality, I spent the better part of the first 12 years of my career in Mid-South. I started there in 1975. I was there a year. I went to Texas, and then I was in Texas, and then for a short time, and then to Kansas City for even a shorter time, and then back to Texas, and then I went to New York the very first time in '79, and then when I left New York, I went back to Mid South, and then from Mid South to Atlanta, and Atlanta back to Mid South, and then back to Atlanta, and back to Mid South. And then after that, I went to the WWE. So I spent most of my career prior to the long run in the WWE with Bill Watts and Mid-South Wrestling. And people come up to me constantly. All the time. It's like, and talk about Mid-South Wrestling and talk about, it's almost like, it's just like ECW has their cult following. Well, Mid-South Wrestling does, too. It's incredible. And I am very anxious for the I think it's a three-disc DVD set that's coming out with Mid-South Wrestling that the WWE is going to put out. I know that one of the reasons that a DVD just from the WWE on me had been shelved for a while was because they didn't have any of that footage, because 90% of my time prior to the WWE was with them, and so like there weren't too many places they could go to put together a DVD that encompassed my entire career. But now they have it all, so I'm interested to see what it's going to be.
Yeah, can you talk about, with Mid-South, talk about the major feud with the biggest star in Mid-South and, someone you were very close to, someone people remember to this day very strongly, the Junkyard Dog, Sylvester Ritter. Can you talk about your relationship with him and then how that bled into the program, the work that you guys did together in Mid-South?
Absolutely. JYD was, he was not a great wrestler. but he was an absolutely over-the-top character. I mean, you know, in wrestling, wrestling is sports entertainment, and you have to have charisma. And you can't learn charisma. You either have it or you don't. Now, if you have it, you can build on it. You can pull more of that out of somebody as they get comfortable with themselves in any particular character. But JYD was one of those guys. He was, you know, you give him a microphone and nobody was better. And he appealed to everybody. He appealed to black, white, yellow, and green. And he just, you know, had a great look, great physique, took care of himself. And he was smart enough to know that, you know, the few things he did very well, he did. And the things that he didn't do very well, he just stayed away from. And the guys working with him, like myself, I can remember when I turned I turned heel. I mean, I had never been a heel, you know, until I shot the angle with JYD. I mean, I started in Mid-South. I mean, the people in Mid-South territory watched me grow up, really, you know. The really great thing about the angle was that it was so well known that JYD and I were, I mean, outside of wrestling, just very good friends. I mean, you know, when I married my wife, Melanie, you know, JYD was the best man. We rode together a lot, and we were together a lot. And so when I turned on him, oh, my gosh, it was just like, not only did I turn on my best friend, but I betrayed the people of Mid-South because they had, you know, they had just you know, given all that trust and love to me as a guy. You know, it's almost like one of your kids really went out and did something stupid, you know, and you know, just stabbed you in the heart with it. That was the reaction that people had in Mid-South when I turned on JYD. And the way the whole thing came about was that people were just starting to leave from territories all over the country and go to New York. You know, this was, you know, like Vince was just, you know, starting to do his thing, and guys were starting to go, and I know Paul Orndorff went there, and I know that, you know, Paul went before me, Jake went before me. You know, the Samoans had been in Mid-South. They went back, and just all these guys. And JYD went, and so I remember, not JYD, he eventually went, but I remember Ernie Ladd came to me because I was really the only guy in the Mid-South at the time that was traveling anywhere. I was going in and out of St. Louis, and of course, yeah, if you know wrestling, then you know that St. Louis was like a one-city territory. And so Ernie said to me, he says, you need to be looking around because we need a heel. We need a heel for you and the dog, is the way he said it. And what's funny is I used to tease, you know, JYD. You know, I say, look, you know what? You know, you know your music plays and you roll that wheelbarrow out to the ring. You know, and I said, you cock your head and you bark like a dog and you shake your booty a little bit, and 6 or 7 minutes later the match is over and you're making all the money. You know, he would just laugh, you know, so, you know, I got to thinking about it, and I remember going to Ernie's room. He was at the Sheridan airport out by the airport in Shreveport, Louisiana. And I knocked on his door, and I said, Ernie, I said, I found your heel. And he said, you did? Who is it? I said, you're looking at him. And I'll never forget his reaction. You know, if anybody knew Ernie, I mean, the guy was like 7 feet tall, you know, and had great big long arms, and he took 2 steps back. His eyes got as big as saucers, and he just reached out that long arm and pointed his finger at me. And just got this big grin on his face. And he said, you rascal, you. He said, that is a phenomenal idea. And he was booking at the time. He was booking for Bill. And so at that point, I went, really? I mean, you really think it's that good? And he says, absolutely. And so that was the beginning. And then, of course, I turned to another mentor, Terry Funk. I called Terry and I said, look, I said, I've just had a conversation with Ernie Ladd, and here's what's going on down here, and it looks like I'm going to turn heel and work with Dog. And I said, I need some help. I said, because Dog's not a great worker. You know, and he said, Teddy, you got to work around him. He said, put him in the middle of the ring and bounce off of him. You know, he said, and basically that was what you did. I mean, it's like, it's hard to explain, but you incorporate what a guy can do and what he does well in a match, and then you work around him. And I learned how to do that. And, oh, my gosh, I will never forget the first time that we wrestled in New Orleans after the angle was shot. And I told Grizzly Smith, and Grizzly, for those of you who don't know, Grizzly Smith was one of the Kentuckians, and he was like the agent. You know, he was the guy that went to all the towns, you know, and collected the money and took care of the box office and brought the finishes and, you know, the orders down from headquarters, and he was also Jake Roberts' dad. And so I went to Grizz, and I said, Grizz, I am not driving my car to downtown New Orleans. I'm just not doing it. And he looked at me and he said, why? You know, like he didn't know. And I said, because when I come out, it'll be on blocks, you know, if it's not totally destroyed. And he started laughing. He said, well, I tell you what. He says, you ride with me. He says, I'm neutral. And I said, okay, that works. So we go down, and, you know, we were having the matches at what they called the City Auditorium then. And, of course, you know, New Orleans, Louisiana is, you know, like 90%, you know, Afro, you know, African-American. And I mean, you know, there's, you know, it's like I would tease Dog, and I said, I feel like a white dot on a black wall in here. And he started laughing. Anyway, I told him, I said, you know, you can't just stroll out to the ring tonight. I said, these people watched you be betrayed by your best friend. I said, when you hit the door running, you roll in that ring and you come after me like you're, you know, hell bent. And I said, and what I'm going to do is run like a scalded dog, like Terry Funk would say. And I slid out of the ring and I ran around the ring. He chased me and I rolled in and he rolled in and I stopped him, you know, for a second, and then, you know, fired him in and went to do something. And of course he ducks it and he just starts pounding me and the place just erupts. And so he just, I mean, he literally beats me from pillar to post for 70% of the match, you know. And then, of course, you know, it's wrestling. And I can't even remember what the finish was, but I found a way to screw him right at the end. So even though I've had my butt totally kicked and I'm a coward, you know, I sneak out with an ill-gotten win again, so they're going to come back and see us next week. Anyway, we get back in the dressing room. And first, Grizz says, great match, and he was all happy, and he leaves, you know. And so I get undressed and go in the shower. I come out of the shower, and I'm getting dressed. And he comes back in the dressing room, and he looks at me, and he's just shaking his head, and he's got this look on his face. And now he's pointing his finger at me. I said, what's wrong? Did I do something wrong? He said, no, dang it. He said, they slit my tires because I rode with him. You know, the people were so angry, they slit his tires. You know, so it's like, you know, it was just it's just one of those moments in my career that I'll never forget. But working with a dog was a joy. I mean, becoming a heel, you know, it's like when I started in the business, you know, the first 3 months, I mean, I had left West Texas State at the end of my junior year after spring football and the end of classes, and with every intention of going back and finishing the next year, but I had hurt my knee during spring football, and I was a little bit down about that, you know, because, you know, it's kind of like, the first team, second team, all that stuff decided in spring, and so when I got hurt, you know, that kind of put me out of the deal, and I was looking at coming back, you know, having to start behind somebody, and, I just was not real happy with it. And, but, you know, of course, that's what I thought I was going to do. And it was Dick Murdoch who, it was his suggestion. He said, look, he said, instead of getting a summer job here in Texas, he says, why don't you come down to Mid-South and wrestle for the summer and see, you know, see if you really want to do this. And I said, you know, that's not a bad idea. And he said, well, I'll see if I can get you booked with Bill Watts because that's where I'm going. And so that's how I got booked, you know. And so, you know, for that first 3 months, you know, I was so intent on being my dad that I wanted to be a heel. Of course, if you know anything about wrestling, the heels lead the match. You're like, how can I be a heel, you know, and if I've got to lead the match? And, you know, I work with some of these guys, but it made me work harder. It made me think. But by the end of the summer, I decided, because things had gone so well, I had decided I wasn't going back. You know, and for any kids listening out there, if you're in school, finish. I mean, I had a year to go. I was 30 hours away from a degree in secondary education. Not that I've ever used it, but I had, you know, invested 3 years into a college education and had, you know, only a fourth of it left to do and didn't finish. And I still kick myself in the butt. But I was just in love with wrestling. And so I didn't go back. But they, you know, Bill Watts came and said, he said, Ted, he says, you know what? He said, you're 21 years old. You know, he says, you've got a baby face anyway. You look like a baby face. And he said, and the people want to like you, you know. And so he says, I'm turning you babyface. Well, he turned me babyface. And then the plethora, oh, my gosh, the plethora of talent that came through Mid-South that I had the opportunity to work with is just incredible. I mean, you know, Randy Tyler, I don't know if you guys remember Randy. Randy was a great worker, phenomenal worker. He never made it big anywhere, but he was a great worker. With Buddy Roberts, when he was with
Jerry Brown.
Jerry Brown. And what's the other guy?
Jerry Brown.
Yeah, Jerry Brown. You know, those guys. You know, phenomenal workers. And of course, oh my gosh, Carl Cox, Dick Murdoch. Bob Sweetan. You know, not a very good person in life, but as far as wrestling go, he was great. And then, of course, Buck Robley, right there in the middle of all that. And so I had an unbelievable opportunity and was exposed to some of the greatest talent in the country in short order. So, Mid-South is just, and of course, you know, going forward, when Jim Duggan got in the business and came down there, and he's another guy that I had a great run with and a great feud with.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Ted, let's talk about that, because I know this is going to be on these things are going to be on the Mid-South DVD, and they're matches and angles that really set a tone for wrestling that I think goes on the episodic nature of Mid-South television and the logical stories that you guys told and the matches that you have. I think we see a lot of that today on Monday Night Raw. I mean, I think that idea of being able to watch it as a soap opera, watch it as sports, really sports and entertainment together. you talked about turning heel on Junkyard Dog, and then there was a match at the Irish McNeil Boys Club, I knows on this, where you and Jim Duggan were part of the Rat Pack. You two were together, and you were supposed to face Junkyard Dog and Mr. Olympia. And I know that match is on there, and it was at the State Fair, and it shocked everybody in Mid-South Television. One of the most entertaining episodic TV shows I ever saw. Can you talk about that match? You know what I'm talking about? A gorilla played a part?
Yeah. the building where we taped our television show was on the fairgrounds in Shreveport, Louisiana. And so right outside of the building where we were doing our television taping, the State Fair was going on. And so, again, Bill Watts, you know, taking advantage of something that was really going on, you know, in his commentary talking about, yeah, here we are, you know, Irish McNeil Boys Club, you know, with Mid-South Wrestling, and right outside, you know, the State Fair is going on, and they had a gorilla, you know, they had a guy in a gorilla suit walking around, you know, giving balloons to little kids and everything at ringside. And so the gorilla goes and goes and goes and goes, and everybody loves the gorilla. And then, you know, at the proper time,
Can I stop you for a second? I just want to lay some groundwork.
Sure.
I apologize for this, but the match was you were the, you know, you and Duggan were the villains against Junkyard Dog and Mr. Olympia, and whoever lost the fall had to leave Mid-South for 60 days. And everybody, and then right before the match, Bill Watts said Jim Duggan has just left. You know, nobody can find Jim Duggan, but Ted DiBiase has a replacement. It was Matt Bourne, who just passed away. But Matt Bourne and Ted DiBiase, you know, and everybody's thinking, well, Matt Bourne doesn't even work here. Clearly, it's going to be a little bit of a ripoff. Matt Bourne's going to lose and leave town just when he gets here. And
yeah,
that way, it's a dirty trick by Ted DiBiase,
right,
you know, to save his partner, Jim Duggan. But that's not how it all turned out.
No, not at all. And so, thank you for the setup there. But right at the right time, when it looks like we're going to get our tails beat, the gorilla, who's been handing out balloons to all the kids all night, attacks a Junkyard Dog. and when the gorilla pulls the head, you know, the top of the suit off, it's Jim Duggan, the reveal. And oh, my gosh, it was just – it was a classic moment. I mean, and that was the beginning. That was the beginning of what became known as the Rat Pack, you know, which was me and Duggan and Bourne. And
everybody was just shocked. You can't pin the Junkyard Dog. He can't leave town. I mean, everybody, you know, just the stunt. And that's on the Mid-South DVD. I think, honestly, $20, it's well worth it just for that. But, you know, Ted, you and I were talking a little bit before the show. But there's also another match in that, too. And we'll talk about the Rat Pack, and then we'll get to the other match, too.
Well, the Rat Pack was, you know, it was what it was. I mean, we, you know, it's kind of like, and it was a good name, the Rat Pack. I mean, the heels always ran in packs. I mean, the bad guys, you know, it's kind of like bullies. Bullies always run in packs, you know, and it's like when I do school assemblies and I speak to kids all the time, and I tell them, you know, let me tell you about bullies. They're cowards. Bullies are cowards because they don't ever pick on anybody their own size. They pick on somebody smaller, or they run in a pack. There's three or four of them, and then they pick on somebody, you know, irregardless of their size because they outnumber them. But I said, if you confront a bully, he's a coward. that's what you found in the Rat Pack. You know, like three of us together. You know, Jumpy in the alley, or you know, one. It was a lot of fun, and there were so many different things that we did with that. It was just incredible.
And then the Rat Pack broke up. Jim Duggan became became a big star. We talked to him when he did his book a few months ago about this time, but about this match. But he became a big star against you. He became, you know, kind of, you know,
yeah,
the people's champion or an American hero against,
yeah.
against you. And it led to, again, one of the best matches you'll see on one of these, on any of these legacy DVDs WWE puts out. And talk about a stipulation match.
yeah. Oh, it. My gosh. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, because people have said that to me. They said, you know, like, what, you know, there's all kinds of matches you've been in and, you know, different stipulations. There's cage matches and there's chain matches and there's, strap matches and what do you call it with the guys around the ring?
Lumberjacks.
Lumberjack match. I mean, there's all kinds of matches. And so they asked me, and I said, what was the greatest stipulation match you ever had? And I said, well, it was a combination of all the ones you just mentioned because all of the stipulations were in one match. Well, the first thing it was we did this thing, Duggan and I, you know, and Jim and I are tremendous friends. It's kind of like I just tell you this to set this up. Last year, I think we were doing the Comic-Con in Calgary. And, you know, if you go to a Comic-Con, you got all those characters from Star Wars running around. You know, you got the guys in the trooper suits and everything, and R2-D2 and Chewbacca. All right, well, I took a picture of Duggan and Chewbacca, you know, together, and I labeled it and sent it out on Twitter, twins.
Right, yeah.
You know, the long hair and the beard and the whole deal. And so, you know, here's this big burly guy, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and he's, you know, just this massive guy, and we have this, you know, this, it comes to this deal where, and I can't remember the lead in, but the lead, you know, basically it was like the best dressed man. And so we have a contest on television one week where we're both going to wear tuxedos and the people are going to vote. And I said, you know, are you kidding me? I said, if you dress Pigpen up in a tuxedo, he's still Pigpen. He still smells like a pig and looks like a pig. And I said, you dress Jim Duggan up in a tuxedo and he's still, you know, going to look like, you know, a big moron. And so anyway, so they dress us up in tuxedos, and of course it's a work. Of course, because everybody's going to cheer for Jim anyway. So they have the contest, and at the end of the contest, you know, because you know they're telling me that the applause meter is going in the favor of Duggan. You know, I jump down out of the ring, and I go, "Where are they?" You know, and they go, "Well, they're out there." And so the camera follows me out to the ring truck. You know, and I'm pounding on the door of the ring truck, you know, and they won't open the door, and you know, and I can't remember where I got the baseball bat, but I picked the baseball bat up along the way, and of course it was all set up and staged, but I said right next to the TV truck is Jim Duggan's car, and I went, hey, this is Jim Duggan's car. Well, how about that? I said, Duggan, I hope you're watching. And I proceed to smash the windshield. And so I said, yeah, do you know how hard it is to smash a windshield now with tempered glass? Oh, my gosh. And I'm pounding this thing and pounding this thing. And we want it to just shatter and go over and it goes, bip, bip, and it's breaking, but it's not breaking up. So I said, well, I'm like, I'll fix him. So I went up and I didn't stop with the windshield. I did the headlights.
Oh, God.
And I did the taillights.
Yep.
Because I knew he had to leave that night, so part of it was also a rib. But anyway, that was a lead in to this program with Duggan and I. And so what it came down to was this: the ultimate match was we were dressed in tuxedos, going all the way back to the tuxedo thing, inside a steel cage. Okay.
Right.
So, you ever see two guys wrestling tuxedos in a steel cage? Now, inside the steel cage, you know, or attached to one of the ring posts is also a 12-foot pole. And at the top of that 12-foot pole, there is a coal miner's glove, like a loaded coal miner's glove. In other words, if you get to the top of the pole, you get the glove and you can use it on your opponent. You know, falls don't count. There is no disqualification. And loser leave town. I mean, it's like every gimmick match in one match. And Duggan and I had that match. Actually, we had it several times because we had it all over the territory. We had it in Houston. We had it in New Orleans and in Shreveport. And of course, at the end of that week or whatever it took for us to hit all the major towns with the match, because, you know, this is way before Twitter or anybody knew. Obviously, I lost because I was on my way to Japan. But, oh, my gosh, you know. And then I do remember this. You know, it's like, I did something to Duggan, and I climb up the pole, and I get the glove, and I come back down, and I load the glove, and I'm about to hit him, right? And Duggan throws powder in my face and blinds me, and, you know, of course, the glove comes off, and then he knocks me out, and I lose, and I go to Japan. But, yeah, the coal miners, who was the booker then? The little guy from Tennessee.
Bill Dundee
booked that match.
Wow. I mean, I've seen the match. I mean, it was a professional shoot that Joel Watts did, and it, you know, it made its rounds. But now on this DVD, Jim Ross has gone back into the studio because there was no play-by-play for it, and added play-by-play. And I know,
really?
I mean, I'm really excited to see that.
Wow.
I mean, I'm really.
Wow.
That's going to be, you know, and I know he was fired up to do it. So, Wade, do you want to take this somewhere?
Well, yeah. If you're just joining us live, you're listening to, and I'm sure you recognize the voice, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. He is our guest today for the full program. Bruce Mitchell has been asking questions for the first half hour, senior columnist for PWTorch.com and Pro Wrestling Torch. And I'm host Wade Keller. We have a bunch of email questions that have been sent in that we want to have time to get to some of them. We also have our phone banks filled up. Well, we can't really – I guess we could fill them up, but there's a lot of people on hold. We'll put it that way. More than a dozen, and we will give out the phone number if you want to get in line. We might get to you, 646-721-9828. Ted, I want to take a moment right before we go to phone calls here to talk about the new project that you're involved in, or the new website that you've launched, and a Facebook page that people can like called the Heart of David Ministry, and the website, I just pulled up the URL, heartofdavidministry.com, and also facebook.com/heartofdavidministry. This just launched, I think, last week. Is that right,
well,
Ted?
Yeah. They've been up, and then I did makeovers on them because, you know, with all the social media and the different devices now that people can get on the internet with. I have two websites. One of them is milliondollarman.com, and that also has a Facebook page, and then Heart of David Ministry in its own Facebook page. So, you know, and I would say, fans, bear with me because, you know, this is, I mean, it's not new to everybody, but, you know, and I'm on Twitter. But, you know, it's like I'm not one of those. I don't get on there and tweet like 5, 6, 7 times a day. I'm lucky if I get one a day, or maybe a couple. Or sometimes it goes in spurts. You don't hear me for a while because I get busy. But I understand its value for sure. And yeah, please check out the websites. I've started a blog, and yeah, you know, you can tune in to those websites to find out what I'm doing, where I'm going, and what's going on with Ted DiBiase these days.
Very good. Let's go ahead and go to the phone call since we have a lot of people eager to talk to you. I would appreciate, because our time is limited, that you get right to your question and try to limit yourself to one or two quick questions. And if you want to, you know, talk about a favorite memory that you have of Ted, certainly you'd like to hear that too. But no speeches today, in other words. All right. Let's begin with area code 931, and then on deck is 865. 931, please state your name and where you're from.
This is Andrew calling from Clarksville, Tennessee.
Andrew, thanks for calling. What have you got for Ted?
Yeah, I'm going to keep it short because there's a bunch of people on the line, and I don't have any really cool stories since because I really didn't watch wrestling at that time, let alone even be born. But it's really cool to talk to you, Ted, and I'm just wondering, what do you think of Bray Wyatt, the son of IRS?
You have a tie to Mike Rotunda in multiple ways, but Money Inc. being the primary one. We also got an email question from somebody asking about Money Inc. and working with Mike Rotunda and what you thought of Mike as a worker. So you can talk about both, Ted.
Okay, what was the question that he asked?
We should establish first, so callers know this too. Do you watch much of the current product?
I haven't lately.
Okay.
Because I'm very, very busy.
Yes. Well, that's understandable. Well, we'll talk about Mike Rotunda and you're teaming with him and your thoughts on that part of your career and Mike as a worker.
Well, Mike was great and a consummate gentleman. I loved working with the guy, and we gelled very well together as a team. I can't say enough good about him. He was always there, always on time, always, it's like it was a mutual thing. It wasn't like, kind of like we shared everything, and it's like, okay, I don't have an idea right now. What do you got, Mike? So we went back and forth, and I've only had a few, tag team partners, and he was one of the best that I ever had, and on top of his wrestling ability, a wonderful guy, absolutely wonderful guy, and I think the world of his boys and his families as well. So not enough I could say good about Mike.
Yep, and Bray Wyatt now, Wyndham Lawrence Rotunda. Is getting a big push on television right now. So it might be if you're around on a Monday or Friday night, it might be worth checking out because there's a lot of buzz around.
Which there. One?
Wyndham.
Wyndham.
Yep.
Wow. And what are they calling him now?
Bray Wyatt. He runs a compound, and he's got the Wyatt family with different followers and does kind of a backwoods deliverance type character.
Yeah.
And it's really, they built a recent episode of Raw around his debut, the character's debut, after they ran vignettes for several weeks. You know something about that, Ted, running vignettes
for
several weeks.
Well, you know what, and I'll tell you what, I'm glad this, I heard a little bit about this, and I'm sorry that I haven't been keeping up, but it's just, the focus of my life is ministry, and so that's what I'm doing most of the time, and now, because my son hasn't been on in a while, then, if he was on every week, then it would be a little bit different. I'd have a special interest in watching, but it's kind of like, I wrestled all my life, so, do I want to tune in to Monday Night Raw and SmackDown every Friday? No. It's kind of like, every now and then, I think you could talk to just about anybody, and they'd say the same thing.
Well, it's funny,
I think that, I was asking that question when I was there, when I went back to work for the company, and for the year and a half that I was working for them again, I said, why aren't we doing vignettes anymore? I mean, vignettes is what, I was heel and hated before I ever walked out through the curtain the first time because of the vignettes. So I'm glad that they're doing that again. And that sounds good. I mean, that was, let's go back to 2005 and 2006 when I was there. And I remember, of course, let me talk about that a little bit. It's kind of like they hired me to come back and be part of the creative team. And they said, Ted, you're not really, you're not really booking, but, you're kind of like an advisor to this team of writers. But when you get there, that's really what they're asking you to do. And I tried to tell, Stephanie, I said, Steph, I've known you since you were 16 years old. And I said, I'm not Clint Eastwood. It's kind of like, that's a gift. I could come up with finishes. I could take care of Ted, if you know what I mean. But for me to sit and think about all these other characters and what they should be doing and an extended storyline, that's just not me. It's not my gift. And I said, it is a gift. I tell you, somebody who, if he stays on track and stays, if he continues to have a clean nose, so to speak, Jake Roberts. Jake Roberts would be great in creative. He's one of those guys. I saw it in Jake a long time ago. I saw it in Michael Hayes. The first couple of weeks I knew him, and that's where Michael's at now. But anyway, I was observant, and she said, watch the shows, tell me what you think. And back then, and I said, here's what I think. I said, everybody's bald-headed, tattooed, you know, jacked up and trying to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. I said, everybody looks the same. I said, where is the, you know, we had the Million Dollar Man and the, you know, we had the Hillbilly Jim. You know, we had, you know, oh, my gosh, we had all these characters. And that's what they need to get back to.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's what they're doing.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts. Well, Bray Wyatt is not a bald-headed, tattooed Stone Cold Steve Austin lookalike or wannabe. So, you're absolutely, that's a good thing, and it is. It's one of, your criticism is right on. I mean, there was a time where there was a real uniformity to a fault of what a wrestler quote had to look like to fit the part, and it just didn't. I mean, I grew up with the AWA and Mad Dog Vachon and Baron Von Raschke, and then the East West Connection, Jesse Ventura,
right.
And Adrian Adonis. Jerry Blackwell, one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. I just respect his work in the ring and behind the microphone so much. None of them had, and the Crusher. I mean, everybody was so different. And I felt like at that time period you're talking about, wrestling fans were kind of getting cheated out of the whole range of body types and characters that can work when you can write your own story as a booker and a promoter.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's
all
true.
Right. Go ahead, Ted.
I know with Vince, Vince loves to be in the gym. And I take my hat off to him. Oh, my gosh. I mean, how old is Vince now? 68?
Yeah, I think so.
And he looks like he's 40.
Yeah.
You know, and that's because
he turns 68 next month, so we'll give him a month to be 67 before.
Yeah. but you know what I'm saying? It's just like, it's phenomenal. And it's just, that's always been known. New York's, he likes big, big muscled up guys, and that's okay. But, but that's not to say that you can't, you don't have to be. But I think just too many guys were trying to be the same thing and look the same. And,
absolutely.
And to get over in wrestling is to be different, which is why I was so frustrated with whoever was doing the writing at the time. When they were starting to try to give my son a push, because they were trying to make him an extension of me giving him the $1 million belt and all that business. And I said, no. I said, let him be himself. As a matter of fact, he needs to go as far away from that as he possibly can. Now, he's back on the road, but he's not been back on TV. And the reason he's not been back on TV is because they don't want to just throw him back out there. I've had a lot of frustration there too as a dad, because in trying not to be biased, but I ask all my friends, Arn Anderson, all the guys, Mike Rotunda, the guys that are the producers now, I said, did I miss something? I said, is there something wrong with my kid? Does he just not have it? And they said, oh, no, he's one of the best wrestlers we've got. So I said, what's the deal? And he said, it's just, we got to find something for him.
Yeah.
Because they screwed it up the first time, in my opinion, by trying to, because the idea was that he kept saying, I'm not my dad, but that he starts acting more and more like me, and then they gave him the girl. Well, when they gave him the girl, I said, okay, if they're going to give you the girl, then you got to treat her like Randy treated Elizabeth. And they said, I can't do that.
Mm.
I said, why? Because we can't treat the ladies like that anymore.
Yeah.
PG-rated show. I said, so what's the point of you having the girl then? I said, because the heat's for you. Anyway, old school.
Do you think there's a disadvantage for your son, Ted, in the situation he's in now, given the way the wrestling industry is structured, compared to the territory days? I mean, if somebody just wasn't quite clicking, or the promoter, booker didn't know what to do with them, you could at least, if they had the talent that Ted Jr. has, you could send him off. He could travel somewhere else and find a place to land. I would think that would be advantageous rather than, and it's not the worst thing in the world, but working house shows and getting some experience in the ring and kind of waiting, just waiting around.
Yeah, it is hard, you know, and it's hard, and it's frustrating too for him because he, I mean, he came on the scene and he was like he was shot out of a cannon.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, you know, it's kind of like there are certain types of characters and roles, and I'll be honest with you. I mean, as much as Ted tried to be a heel, everybody wants to like him. And that's exactly what Bill Watts said to me when I started working. The fans want to like you, you know. It's finding who that is, and them trying to find it. And you're right. It is kind of a shame now because there's not that many places to go. But that might be the thing. You know, that might be something for him to think about. I don't know. But
yeah.
It has nothing to do with his talent.
I, you're not just a dad saying that through blinders. I mean, I've been very high on Ted and what I've written and said on this show over the years, and I think that the problem isn't with Ted as much as it is with WWE and their team if they can't figure out how to do something with him. I think part of it comes down to what we were talking about a minute ago with the bald-headed, muscular guys. They're just not sure what to do with somebody who has a more ordinary look. And I think the fact that he's ordinary and that he's not really fat, he's not jacked up.
Well, you know what it is. I mean, he's got a great physique. He's a good-looking guy, and he really is. I mean, now, you know, one of the number one sponsors of the WWE is the Army National Guard, and they absolutely love my son. That's who they want. That they, you know,
yeah.
I'll put it this way. There's a guy already there in the role that my son would best fit, and his name is John Cena.
I don't disagree with you there, and he's still young enough. I think there's plenty of time, and I think he will end up being. The fact that he's sticking it out and still has a passion for it, despite kind of the setback, I think is also something that Vince McMahon and Triple H and Stephanie will certainly take note of.
Well, and they have. I mean, because he hasn't, of course, I don't know how long that'll last. I mean, it's not about, you know, being bitter or anything. It's just about getting on with life. And, you know, the clock is ticking. And, you know, if you're going to do something with me, then let's do it.
All right, well, let's jump back to the phone lines. Bruce Mitchell is still with me. He's a senior columnist for Pro Wrestling Torch for over 22 years. And we are joined by Ted DiBiase. I'm going to give just a couple quick housekeeping notes before we move on to some phone calls. And that is that you can find this show live or on delay at pwtorchlivecast.com. We are here 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. Bruce Mitchell hosts with Travis Bryan on Mondays in the hour before Raw live. And then Tuesdays through Fridays, we are here from 5:30 Eastern or at 5:30 Eastern every day, Tuesday through Friday. We have been here for 3.5-plus years. We have not missed a day, including holidays. So at 5:30 Eastern, Tuesday through Friday, look for us at pwtorchlivecast.com. All shows you can hear live or on delay at that website. You can also, at that website, click on a bunch of links to subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook and all kinds of good stuff like that. So follow us there. We have a VIP website. If you enjoy what we're doing here with Live with Ted DiBiase, in a bit here we will be shifting to a VIP only after show and tackling some email questions from VIP members and some topics we don't get to on the live show. To become a VIP member, you go to pwtorch.com/govip. One thing that we added this week are 10 years ago audio shows that we recorded at the beginning of the VIP website launch. We launched the VIP website in May of 2003. So we are now airing the Wade Keller Hotline, roundtables with Bruce Mitchell, Pat McNeil, and Jason Powell, and our post-pay-per-view roundtables from 10 years ago. Those are now going up exclusively for VIP members. So if you were just getting into wrestling then but weren't following the Torch and our way of covering wrestling, and you like the people you hear and the way we cover wrestling here on the live cast, I think you'll find it fascinating as a VIP member to relive those days from 10 years ago. And so that's one quick thing I wanted to mention. One more reason to go VIP, 25 years plus worth of archives at the VIP website and tons of stuff added on today's wrestling every single day. All right, let's shift back to Ted DiBiase, our guest, and our phone calls. Thanks for everybody for listening and also those who are on hold who want to talk to us. And we'll go next to 865 and then after that 219. 865, please state your name and where you're from.
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Stephen from Tennessee.
Hey, Stephen, what have you got for Ted?
Hey, Mr. DiBiase, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm very, very blessed. I just want to say, actually, sorry to talk to you again, as I actually got the opportunity to drive you and your son around town here in Knoxville when you guys were out here a couple of years ago for one of your ministry events. So it's an honor to talk to you again, sir.
Awesome.
Just a couple of quick questions I wanted to ask you. Number one, with all the vignettes and stuff that you did to lift the gimmick of being the million-dollar man, I was just wondering, was a lot of that stuff as far as, like, buying the expensive dinners and the cars and all that stuff, was that out of your own pocket, or did the company kind of just give you, like, the play money and say, here, go have a good time? And my second question being, the first match I can ever remember watching is the SummerSlam 88-minute event with Hogan and Macho Man versus you and Andre the Giant. And since a lot of hardcore wrestling fans love Andre stories, I was just kind of wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing probably your favorite story or experience hanging around with Andre.
Sure. Let's see, back to the first question was, what was it?
On vignettes?
The money. Who provided the money for you to play?
The money. All that, you know, everything I did was company money. I mean, and it was like, you know, it was kind of like, and the way Vince put it was, he said, you know, we're going to be on the honor system here. And he says, now, he says, if you abuse it, you'll lose it. In other words, you know, don't be going out and just, you know, blowing it. And I would pick my spots, like going into a restaurant and standing up and announcing myself and saying, hey, you know what, I'm the million-dollar man. And just to show everybody that I'm not such a bad guy, I'm picking up the tab. And I would have Virgil walk around and pick up everybody's check, you know. And you know, of course, I'm not gonna walk into, you know, Ruth Chris Steakhouse when there's 50 people in there and pick up all the tabs, you know. I picked my spots and you know, word like that spread. But yeah, all that stuff was done. Even like when I did Lifestyles and Rich and Famous, that was Vince's house, not mine.
Oh wow.
And you know, and so. You know, we did all those things, but they were gimmicks. It was all done to, you know, present the illusion that I was really rich. And, of course, you know, it was a tough job, but somebody had to do it.
And, you know, I want to point out, you're talking about not just on-the-air skits,
yeah.
But you did that away from the arena, away from television.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get that atmosphere.
Because
absolutely.
You knew, and there wasn't social
there's
media then, Ted,
like,
but if there was...
Nothing.
Yeah. If there was social media and you had bought everyone dinner or paid everyone's tab, word would spread within 5 hours. Oh, my God, million-dollar man's out there buying everybody's meals. Like it,
yeah.
But still, that word of mouth had value.
Absolutely. And again, I tip my hat to Vince because, you know, it was a stroke of genius. I mean, what better way to market that than for me to do those things? And Andre, oh, my gosh, Andre was a wonderful man. I mean, I knew Andre before I was a wrestler. I knew Andre when I was still a college student, first time he came to wrestle in Amarillo, Texas. And my favorite Andre story, it's in my book. And here's a guy that's 7 feet 4 inches tall, weighs 450 pounds, sitting in a first-class seat. He's not comfortable. So you put him on a plane for 14 hours to Tokyo, you know, and we go and we drop our bags and we're going to go out and get something to eat. That's what everybody did, because you got to stay up really late as you can, because if you don't, you're gonna wake up early in the morning, and then you're gonna have at 2 o'clock in the afternoon you're gonna be falling asleep because of the jet lag. So I push the button for the elevator, the door opens and Andre's already there, and we're headed down. Now this elevator stops on virtually every floor as we're going down. Now, what you and I consider a full elevator here in the United States, in Japan, no way, Jose. We're talking about a country that has, you know, the size of California with a population half that of the United States, and they stack them up. And they actually pay people to push people onto the trains during rush hour. It's incredible. So Andre doesn't like to be crowded. And now he's been on a plane for 14 hours and, you know, and he's, you know, in one of those moods like we all would be, right? These people keep getting on. So finally he reaches over, he taps me on the leg, And I look up at him, and he winks at me. And I went, okay, something's about to happen. Well, all I can say is that the next thing that you heard, and it seemed like it went on for eternity, was the loudest, longest giant fart that you could imagine. I mean, all I could picture, I just looked straight ahead, and all I could picture was the guy that was standing directly behind him, who was right at butt level. And I mean, it was like everybody in that elevator absolutely froze. Everybody stopped talking, and I was like, I remember thinking, when is it going to end? And then, but when the door opened, it was like an exodus. I mean, those people could not get off of that elevator long enough, fast enough. And then all you could hear was, that giant just laughing.
Awesome.
You had to be there to really appreciate it, but I'm sure you can get it.
Hey, Ted, do you know whatever happened to the blonde woman that you humiliated in the in-ring skit?
The one.
There was that blonde woman you just pressed down and humiliated as a million-dollar man.
Well, now there was one that I did on the podium that I made bark like a dog.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, I don't know, but you know, she was somebody's friend, and the thing that she got a lot of heat over that because apparently she was very much into she would go to and she had dogs.
Yeah.
And she went to these dog shows, and she would show dogs and everything. And so what do I have her on television doing? Barking like a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I heard that she got a lot of flack from those people for doing that.
Wow. Well, there's
one
of the guys that in Grand Rapids, Michigan, there was a kid who came in the ring after a match, and I said, Virgil, take off my boot and my sweaty sock. I got $300 here for somebody that'll kiss my feet. And a kid that we all know as Rob Van Dam climbed in the ring and kissed my feet. This is before anybody knew who he was and before he was ever anybody. And I didn't know that until I came back to work for the company a few years ago.
Bruce,
true story.
I was going to say, the first story, I think, Wade, I think you had a rumor not confirmed, but denied on that first
story. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
But the second story, that's a tremendous story. I didn't realize
awesome.
That with Rob Van Dam.
Bruce, go ahead if it's a follow-up on something, but otherwise we can save our, more good stuff.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Go
okay.
to the phone.
Do you love Pro Wrestling Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more. And Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at Ringrust Radio and email us at ringrustradio@yahoo.com.
Yep, so let's go with phone lines. We had an international caller who's going to be up next, just drop off. So I want to get to these people in case they're at work or have lives outside of this, and they can listen later. But 219, you are now live on the show. Thank you for holding. Please state your name and where you're from.
Hi, this is Mike from Indiana.
Hey, Mike, thanks for calling. What have you got for Million Dollar Man, Teddy Biasi?
Thank you. I just want to say Million Dollar Man, he's one of my favorite wrestlers growing up, my favorite bad guys. The question, I have a couple questions for you, Ted. A couple years ago, you exchanged some not-so-friendly words over the Internet with the Ultimate Warrior. My first question is, what originally created the friction between you and the Warrior? And can you talk about what happened behind the scenes? And what do you think about the WWE reaching out to him recently with a video game deal? Vince McMahon himself welcomed him back to the WWE in a Twitter post. Do you think that reaching out to him is a good decision on the WWE's part, or is this a mistake that they'll regret after the history between Warrior and the company?
Yeah, good topic, Mike. Yeah, Ted, you might not realize, the latest on that, but it just broke this week or last week that the video game company WWE works with signed a deal with Ultimate Warrior, and Vince McMahon went so far as to say, you know, in a on Twitter, you know, welcome back to the fold. And Ultimate Warrior also posted, or actually was interviewed, I believe, on a satellite radio show, that you know, it's good that they've been able to put the past behind them and they're moving forward. So certainly interesting character. Bruce, you and I talked for 30 minutes on the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show for VIP members yesterday about Warrior's legacy, such as it is. Ted, yeah, very interested to hear your thoughts on him.
Well, you know, again, there was a miscommunication, like back in 2010, in terms of the, you know, this was the year that I was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Vince had offered the Warrior the Hall of Fame that year, and the word I had was that it was conditional with him on getting an apology for the DVD, The Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. And of course, you know, Vince didn't do that. And you know, and here's the thing I respect about Vince. Number one, he's a businessman, and it's about making money. And if he can make money with you, then he's gonna make money with you, and he doesn't have to like you. And you know, of course, but I think burying the hatchet is tremendous. And my biggest problem with Jim Helwig is his lack of respect for our business, because he's not shown that to anybody. I mean, I met the guy, the first time I met him was when him and Steve Borden, Sting, came into Mid-South as a tag team. That's the first time I ever saw him. And you know, Warrior was never a great wrestler. He was a good character, and yes, he had a lot of charisma. But unless he had someone in the ring, you know, like me or any one of a number of other guys at the time that could work to lead him, he couldn't work. I mean, okay, how many Warrior matches have you seen, and how many are the same?
All of them.
One of the best matches I ever saw him have was the match he had with Hogan in Toronto when Hogan put him over for the title.
Yep.
And he had that match because Hulk Hogan led him around the ring and showed everybody that he really could work. Because that was probably one of the best matches I ever saw Warrior have. And it's like going to autograph shows where there are other celebrities. I mean, celebrities from other, you know, like baseball players, football players, not just wrestlers. And this guy comes in and has got to have his own room and his own, I mean, it's like you want to stop and go, what, just who do you think you are? And, you know, why do you think you need to get all this privileged treatment? You know, and if you go back, have you guys watched The Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD?
Oh, absolutely. We did a 2-hour audio show going through it.
Now, I was one of the guys that was interviewed for that, and I don't know how many other guys he interviewed. Now, all of those interviews were done, you know, they weren't all done in the same day. I mean, it took weeks, you know, and it was like there was no, we didn't all sit down at a conference table and say, okay, you know, you say this and I'll say that. But collectively, everybody on that tape basically said the same thing, and that's been the problem. It's like, now the last big hoo-ha with him and me was someone asked me, you know, if Vince would have asked me, Ted, do you think that the Ultimate Warrior deserves to be put into the Hall of Fame, what would you have said? And I said, well, if I'd have been asked, I would have said no. I said, because it's, in my opinion, the Hall of Fame is more about, it's not just about, you know, how good you are as a wrestler. It's about everything else. It's like about, it's your total contribution to the industry. And, you know, knowing his history, It's kind of like, you know, he came in and really more than anything used the business and everybody else in it. My opinion was no. Well, somehow word got back to him that I had been asked by Vince McMahon. And, of course, that wasn't true. And then he went on some tirade, like some, I don't know, three-page blog or something about me and how I'd let myself go towards the end of my career and had cottage cheese legs and all this other stuff. And I was like, good gosh, man. I said, do you not have anything better to do? And I said, I am not going to spend the time to answer all of this, but I'll just simply say this. That DVD was done, and independent of one another, 10 or 12 of some of the most respected guys in our industry collectively said the same thing about you. And I said, I've never heard you say anything negative about yourself. And as far as my faults, Jim, I wrote a book about it. I wrote a whole book about my faults, yeah, about my shortcomings. And I put it right out there for everybody to see. Yeah, I was a womanizer. Yeah, I was partying, wild man, and doing all this crazy, stupid stuff. But I came to a point in my life where I decided that it was time to grow up and put my family and God before all of those other things. So, and again, and I don't hate Jim. I don't hate anybody. I would be the first one. Yeah, I mean, I would be more than happy to sit down with Jim Helwig and say, let's talk this thing through, pal. And it's like, if you're willing to admit to any of these, to having a fault. But to this day, it's like he doesn't have any.
Ted,
I mean, am I missing something?
No. you're not.
It's kind of like, you know, and there's been several times he's tried to do things, you know, outside of this business that have just, wrestling-related things, like some big comeback that just absolutely bombed.
Yeah.
Attacking Hulk Hogan about something. What was that all about?
He's taken advantage.
You know, I have to say, I watched the video where he was going to reveal all these Hulk Hogan secrets, and he talked for a very long time, and I really don't know what it was about after I watched it, but I wasn't paying close enough attention.
Well, now let me say this about that. If you watch any of his interviews, I mean, he got an interview for 3 minutes, and when he was done, I'd go, what did he just say?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing. Now, here's my point. Does Jim Helwig have some charisma? Absolutely. Was the guy an absolutely? I mean, you can't look like that and not be dedicated. And you talk about, I mean, to maintain his body like that and work the schedule that we had to work is incredible. And I've always given him credit for that. I said, but you know, that's just it. You know. That aside, what did you bring to the plate? It's kind of like, it's like talking about Junkyard Dog. JYD was not a great wrestler. He was a great character, and he had a great physique, but he knew it, and he appreciated the people who took care of him,
yeah,
like me and so many other guys in the ring. And that's all. That's all any of us are saying. It's like, you know, come down off your pedestal, Jim. For whatever reason you think that that you deserve to be there, because if you think it's just because you have this great body, then, you know, go look at Muscle and Fitness magazine.
Ted, did Ultimate Warrior did anybody have less respect among his peers than Warrior that you ran into among people who got, you know, a top level type of push? I mean, maybe there was some, you know, lowly guy who was around for 2 weeks who was worse.
I'll be honest with you, I can't think of anybody.
Yeah.
I get along with everybody. I haven't, you know, I don't have four enemies, you know, in the business. I mean, there's some guys that, you know, you care about, you don't care about, you know, but but he's just the one guy who's just, I've always said the same thing. It's like, you know, golly, it's like, who do you think you are?
Well, give me an example, Ted, of what Ultimate Warrior did to earn that disrespect or to not earn respect? Are there some tangible examples of...
One tangible example is that holding Vince up for money at a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Basically, he's the main event, he's the champion, and if you don't pay me more money, I'm not going out there. Well, he's not just screwing Vince. He's screwing every one of us. You can't get any more selfish than that.
How about inside the ring? As a worker, the way that he gave, there was a give and take. There's always a give and take to a match.
Here's the point. And here's the thing with him and me, or him and any one of a number of guys, there wasn't a whole lot he could control because he didn't know how to work.
Yeah.
He had to be in there with somebody who could tell him what to do.
But he didn't know that or respect that or acknowledge that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
And did he hurt people?
I haven't heard too many stories, but I'm sure. There are some.
Yeah.
I mean, but he never hurt me. He never hurt me personally, but it's like I didn't have that many matches with him. I mean, I wrestled him right after he got the belt when we went to Japan, and it was kind of funny because. Vince didn't realize, I'd been going to Japan for some time, and right before I left Japan, I had been Stan Hansen's tag team partner, and Stan Hansen was without a doubt the most popular foreign wrestler ever in Japan, him and Brody. And when Brody and them, when he split up with Brody, I was his tag team partner for about a year, and then I went to the WWF, and so we go back over there. He's the new champion, and he's wrestling me, and I'm the one everybody's cheering for, and I'm the heel. And so we started the match, and the way I had the match in my head was, okay, I'm gonna make this guy. He's just got the championship. I'm gonna make him look really good here right off the bat. They've never really seen him here, so I'm gonna make him. Give him a lot here at the beginning, then I'll cut him off and get a good steam of heat, and we'll go into the finish. Well, maybe it was Vince's way of getting his way, but and I knew what our time limit was, so we got the part in where I made him look really good, and it was just as I cut him off right to start the heat. The referee says, "Go home."
Oh man!
Oh yeah, I wasn't very happy that night.
Wow.
But that wasn't Jim. But I'm just saying, overall, it's just been an attitude. I mean, it's like I went to New York one time, and it was an autograph signing. He refused to stay at the same hotel that everybody else was staying at, and he had to have a private room. Like to do his autographs. I'm like, are you kidding me? Mm. Are you serious? It's kind of like some of these bands who only green M&Ms or something.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, be real. I mean, that those are the things that irritate me about the guy.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Ted, I know we had talked beforehand through email about you having about a 90-minute window. We're at about 75 minutes now. I want to have a portion for a page.
I can go as long. I'm good. If you want me to go longer, I can.
Great. That's what I want to establish, because I definitely want to have time to give the VIP members a little exclusive segment. And if we're running out of time, then we'd go to that now. But since we have more time with you,
on Jim,
that's great.
I'll be honest.
Absolutely.
With you.
Yeah. Go ahead.
If Jim and Vince can bury the hatchet, that's great. You know what? No one was happier to see Bruno Sammartino get inducted into the Hall of Fame this year than I was. And there's another hatchet that I was glad to hear is buried, if it indeed is.
Yeah.
And again, I'm a minister. I don't hate anybody. it's just kind of like, you know, all I would want from Jim is, you know, let's be real. If you want to talk, let's sit down and let's really talk. You know, but, you know, do I hate the guy? No, I don't hate the guy. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I probably feel sorry for him more than I do anything else.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Ted DiBiase is our guest, Million Dollar Man. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Torch senior columnist Bruce Mitchell. Bruce, any follow-up on Ultimate Warrior, or should we move to another phone call?
I think move to another phone call.
Yep. Great story, Ted. Appreciate that insight on him, because it's been weird with him getting back into the news, because people who didn't live through it and just saw clips kind of think he was as big as Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and as respected as Randy Savage as a worker or, you know, at least in that conversation. And it's good to have somebody like you backing up kind of what Bruce and I are trying to tell people, which is,
No,
Jim Helwig was not respected, and he wasn't particularly successful compared to the push he got.
No, he had a phenomenal body, and he had a gigantic push, and he couldn't do that today because there's not as many guys available today that could take him in the ring and make him look that good.
Yeah, yep. So. Very good. All right, let's go to 778 and then on deck 816. Our phone number is 646-721-9828. And our email address, as always, is pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Leilani Kai, by the way, 1980s women's wrestler, was Pat McNeil's guest on Wednesday, 2 days ago. If you haven't heard that yet, check it out at pwtorchlivecast.com and hear the full version, including the VIP after show, as a VIP member in the VIP audio show section. All right, 778, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're from.
Hi, this is Jason from Vancouver, BC.
Great city, Jason. How are you doing? Thanks for calling.
That's a beautiful day outside, too, man.
Yeah. Well, go ahead with your question for Ted.
Yeah, Mr. DiBiase, a big, big fan. I started watching wrestling in the late 80s when you joined WWF, and you've always been one of my all-time favorites. It's kind of nice to talk to you. I got two questions. The first question is, when did you, or how did you come up with that trademark million-dollar laugh? I still mark out when I see interviews with you do that.
Jason, if you've been listening to the show, you've heard it come naturally about 6-7 times.
Okay, let me answer that question first. You know,
yeah.
it is an extension of the way I do laugh. I mean, the father who raised me was a wrestler, Mike DiBiase, but my biological father was a singer, and he had this unbelievable deep bass voice. He was actually Tennessee Ernie Ford's backup, you know, on the old Tennessee Ernie Ford show.
Wow.
And so the depth of my laugh comes from, it's natural. But to answer your question, I had done an interview. You know, we used to do our interviews. We'd set up with, they'd make these little soundproof rooms in the buildings where we were doing taping our TV shows back when we were taping him. We were doing three shows, you know, like once every 3 weeks we'd do three shows on one day and three the next day, and in there somewhere we'd do our interviews. And we would be doing interviews for all these individual markets, like, you know, okay, we're going to be in Houston, we're going to be in Denver, we're going to be here, you know. And so I ended an interview with that laugh. And Vince just happened to be walking by, and he stuck his head into the room, and he said, "That's it." He said, "Ted," he said, "I want you to begin every interview and end every interview with that laugh." And so that's how it started. So, you know, maybe like Michael Buffer, I should go out and get it trademarked or something.
Jason, did you have a follow-up?
What's your other question?
Yeah, just a second question. I like to ask wrestlers from that era. I was a big Sensational Sherry fan, and I know you guys got to work together for about a year in between Randy Savage and Shawn Michaels for her. I'm just wondering if you could just talk about working with her, any funny stories you have about working with her. And I think she was the only person they could sell an atomic drop as good as you.
Well, you know, and that's just that Sherry was wonderful. I mean, it's like hanging out with Sherry was like hanging out with one of the guys, because she you know what? She, I admired her because she came up and she did very well in basically a man's world. I mean, predominantly, you know, pro wrestling is even though we have our ladies' division, it's a tough job, it's a tough road, and she hung in there just like one of the guys, and you know, she never let anybody push her around or anything else, and I always respected that, and we had, you know, and she was funny, she had a great sense of humor. And she listened well too. I mean, like sometimes when she was with me, she would overdo it, and I would always have to, but I would rather somebody overdo it and me have to draw them back in, than them not do enough. I can't remember one night I did a spot where. You know, like I took a bump over the top rope to the floor, and this is after I had done like I'd been bumped around the ring, boom, 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 you know, and then I went and reversed something, and I take this big bump over the top rope, you know, and she comes over to console me, right, you know, on my back, and so she just lays down on top of me, and basically, you know, puts her chest, you know, right over my nose. I mean, like, you know, my nose is like buried right between, you know, her boobs, and she's shaking, and she goes, you know, she says, well, you know, I thought I was going to help you get air, but I guess you're not going to get air that way. I mean, she would just do things, you know, that just would make me laugh. I mean, you know, and there was never anything. You know what I'm saying? There was nothing between her and I. There was no romance or anything like that. It was just like hanging out with one of the guys. I mean, she was respected by everybody because of her toughness, really. I mean, there's some guys that there's some wrestlers I know she could probably whip.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love Sherry.
Excellent. Let's
Thanks
go next
question.
Thanks, Jason, for calling. Good to hear from Vancouver. Let's go to air code 816 next. 816, please state your name and where you're from. All right, we're going to put you on hold 816, and we'll go to you next, but you need to turn the volume down so you're not on delay. Let's go to 773. This may be a regular caller who's having a birthday. Please state your name and where you're from, 773.
Boris from Chicago.
And is it your birthday, Boris?
Yes, it is.
That's why I moved you ahead in line. What do you got?
And what a better
way. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, what better way to actually, you know, bring in my birthday than to talk to the man himself, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
What's your name?
You know,
Boris?
Boris, yep.
Boris.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Boris. And you have a price too.
Wow!
How's that,
well,
buddy?
Let me tell you the story. How
you got a new answering machine message for it?
I see.
Yeah.
I got into wrestling through my grandmother in Mississippi, and she hated you a lot because you feuded with the Junkyard Dog, because that was her favorite. And I rest my grandma's soul, but she would get up and stand in front of that TV and cuss you out. And tell Junkyard Dog to put it on. And put it on. Put it to him. That's our words, our famous words. Put it to him, Junkyard Dog. And that was in, Miss South TV.
Yeah.
I thank you for those memories. And the ones you, and the memories, of course, the memories that you brought to us in the WWF at the time, when you asked the boy to bounce the basketball and you kicked it. That is one of my fond memories, you know, far as, you know, then you bought the title. Hey, it's just on and on memories with you, and I appreciate what you brought to the business. And I hope one day your son get the same experiences that you have and give us memories, too, as he's on his journey through wrestling or whatever. Thank you so much, Ted DiBiase.
Happy birthday, Boris. How old are you
Happy
today?
Happy birthday, Boris.
41.
All right.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it very much.
Very cool. All right, we'll go back to 816, see if there's less background noise. So it's the second last chance. 816, please state your name and where you're from. Yeah, sorry, we're still not, maybe it's just a bad phone connection too. So sorry about that. Let's go to area code 240. You're on with Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Please state your name and where you're from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland.
Hey, Ryan. Thanks for calling. What have you got for Ted?
It's just an opinion question for the Million Dollar Man. What do you feel wrestling will be like after the rapture occurs?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if there'll be enough people left if once the rapture comes. I'll tell you this. I hope I'm not still available. That's all I can say about that.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
All right. Well, why don't we, on that note, we'll wrap up the live cast portion of the show and move to the VIP after show. Bruce, I know you've got some more topics you want to cover. We've also got some good email questions that I have not gotten to yet, and I'll select what I hope are the best of that group, especially if you're a VIP member and you noted it in the email. We will tackle those. Ted, do you have anything else that you want to plug, any appearances, your website and Facebook page again, anything like that, perhaps your Twitter?
Oh, gosh, I'm going to actually be in upstate New York the first weekend in August. On August the 4th, I am going to be making a special appearance at a Ted Nugent concert.
Wow.
And,
man.
And I can't wait. It's like you talk about, there's a lot of people that are fans, of me. Well, I'm a fan of Ted Nugent. I'm not only a fan of his music, I'm a fan of what he stands for. And I'm going to have the privilege of introducing him. And I think, they said there's the guy that's put this thing on has got this little like a sports bar type of place. But, he's got this land behind this place, there in Buffalo. And I think he told me he's going to have a dome, one of those, an inflatable dome done by then. So, They said it was sold out at 2,000 people, but he was going to try to make room for more. So I will be in Buffalo for Ted Nugent on the 4th. And just so you know, he is selling raffle tickets right now for a replica $1 million belt that I have signed. And I will be personally giving that belt to whoever wins it and taking pictures with him. So come on out and see me with Ted Nugent in Buffalo.
Double live Gonzo. I grew up with that. Man.
All right, very good. Now, VIP members will be privileged to hear the rest of this interview. We thank Ted DiBiase very much for his generous time in the last 90 minutes here on the live cast. To go VIP and hear the rest of this and all of our great VIP after show interviews, including Percy Pringle was with us, Paul Bear, for two long form interviews last year, last August and December. I think they average about 3.5 hours each, and just great stuff. Hacksaw Duggan was on the show twice, including VIP after shows. Jake Roberts was on earlier this year, including a VIP after show. So if you like the topics we've talked about with Ted, you're going to want to become a VIP member. Lots of reasons to go VIP. Check it out. Go to pwtorch.com/govip. pwtorch.com/govip. And don't forget, every single day, Ask PW Torch is a new feature we started at the beginning of May at our website, pwtorch.com. Every day, the Torch staff answers questions on current events and wrestling history. We've got a great staff with a diverse group of special knowledge on different eras of wrestling and opinions to go along with it. So check that out every midday at pwtorch.com. And we also encourage you to download our free app on iPhone, Android, Windows phones, Samsung smart TVs, Amazon Kindle Fires, and I think that's it. So just do a search for PW Torch and find us on your smartphone. The app is free, and you can follow a lot of our coverage of wrestling right there on your smartphone. On that note, we will have Kids on Bridges out of the UK play us out, the official band of the PW Torch live cast. And on the other side of the music, some of your VIP email questions and some more questions from Bruce and me. PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to
About 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.